Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Schiller. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist in Los Angeles, and we all know that the truth will set you free. The question we ask on this show is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? The whole point of telling the truth faster is to get to the core and to the root of issues much more quickly so that you're not laboring under the weight of them any longer than is absolutely necessary, so that they're not having any more impact on you physically, emotionally, spiritually, or psychologically, and you can move on with life. You can move on with relationships and go deeper into relationships. And the approach that I take is, like I just mentioned, body, mind, and spirit, a more holistic approach, which means there's a connection to just about anything that goes on in the world and in our lives, and it has an impact, from current events to family issues to life and death issues to getting your paycheck at the end of the week. So tonight's topic kind of, it may sound like a stretch at first. The title of tonight's show is You Do and I'll Sue You. And basically, the premise is we live in a society where it seems increasingly people choose to go to court rather than communicate, negotiate, or mediate to solve conflicts and disagreements. Spouses are suing each other, kids are suing their parents, friends take each other to court after years of friendship. Even business partners will destroy viable businesses over legal disputes or ego and power struggles. Doctors and other professionals are taken to court often because an individual, in my opinion, cannot accept an illness or a doctor's and technology's limitations. So tonight we're going to discuss the emotional, psychological, and spiritual harm all of the suing and all of this legal wrangling is doing to our relationships, our society, and ourselves. Now, this is a live show. And there is a new call-in number in the local Phoenix area. So if you've been listening to the show and you have a different number down, the new number is area code 480-949-1310. Easy enough to remember. 480-949-1310. And unfortunately, we no longer have a toll-free number, so if you're listening via the internet and want to participate in tonight's show with a thought or a problem or an argument or whatever about what we're talking about, you'll have to dial the toll number, which is 480-949-1310. I apologize for that, but life moves on. So, whenever you pick up the newspaper, practically, whenever you turn on the news today, there's lawsuits. People are taking someone to court, it seems like, every day. Some of it we say, God, I can't believe that's even made it to court. But the reality of it is, and I got this off the website for the American Trial Lawyers Association. In 2001... the National Court Statistics Project reports the filing of 93 million new cases in our nation's state courts. 93 million in 2001. Obviously, that's a lot. And getting all of those cases through judges, through the courtrooms, obviously some of these cases don't get to speedy trial. They take a long time. And all of those 93 million cases filed in 2001 were processed through a mere 15,555 individual state trial courts. Now, if you multiply that out, that's quite a few for each court and quite a load for the judges, for the judicial system, for the trial lawyers. It can be a real drain on society, as well as an emotional drain, as well as, you know, some of these require juries, and the emotional drain on the individuals that are sometimes being asked to give up maybe a few days, but sometimes weeks or months in order to sit on a jury. And like in the state of California, you no longer have any excuses to get out of it. Even judges have to serve on juries. So it is a dream. Tonight, my guest, I'm very pleased to have this woman on as my guest. I met her many months ago, actually, and I think it was last February, Maria, at the Income Builders International training that I went to, and Maria was one of the best of the best in terms of the teachers who taught on legal issues. And Maria Speth is an attorney in Phoenix with, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it right, Jaberg and Wilk?
It's the law firm of Jaberg and Wilk.
Jaberg and Wilk. Mm-hmm. I was trying to give it a little European.
Yeah, we've been there, yeah.
And you've been litigating for 15 years, and I know that right now your focus very much is on trademark, copyright, and patent litigation, but you've done lots of different types of litigation in the past, dealing with a lot of the lawsuits that I'm talking about. Am I right?
That is correct. Over the years, I've represented a lot of people who have been involved in lawsuits that include emotional damages and emotional distress, and so then all that drain that you talked about is just compounded. You're not only in the litigation process, but the issue is your own emotional distress.
Right. Well, welcome to the show, and I'm very, very honored that you took the time out to be here tonight.
I'm happy to be here, Stuart.
You heard part of my introduction with that overwhelm of what the courts are going through, and, you know, we live, if you watch TV at all, even if you're not watching news, if you're watching the programs, so many programs on TV today are about the legal system, whether it's, you know, Law and Order or CSI or all this other stuff, and how things go to court. And my first question is almost maybe superficial, but we know that TV and the media really impact cultural values and opinions and things like that. Do you think, in a sense, this is doing a disservice that people have in the forefront of their minds so much the idea of going to court?
Well, first of all, I'd love to, two things sort of stand out for me on this issue. One is that, what's the alternative? So I agree with you that we've gotten a little sue happy these days, and the system is overburdened, and sometimes some of these cases are not well founded. But the vast majority of them are well-founded, and we have to look at what's the alternative. Is the alternative, you know, we draw swords and, you know, and fight it out, or, you know, we argue, we fight? You know, this is the most civil way we can think of resolving a dispute. However, what does happen sometimes is people don't get past the communication stage.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned communication earlier, and what my experience has been is the vast majority of lawsuits could have been avoided if people properly communicated in the relationship to begin with,
mm-hmm.
and set it forth in writing. I mean, you know, us lawyers say, put it in writing, because we all have our own perceptions and our own way of seeing a situation and our own memory of it afterwards. And so two people who are in the same room in the same conversation see it completely different after the fact. So put it in writing and try to avoid those things.
Mm-hmm.
But there are just many, many, many situations where people have tried to work it out, they have a difference of opinion, they don't want it to, you know, to turn to something ugly, and they think, well, there's the court system. That's what the court system is there for. An independent,
which is a last resort, though, and it should be used as a last resort.
Agreed. It's a last resort,
right.
Absolutely. They should try to work it out amongst themselves if they can't, maybe perhaps mediate. If that doesn't work, and with a third-party mediator, if that doesn't work, that's what the court system is for.
Now, you talk about writing as a therapist very often. Like, if I have a couple who is having a difficult time hearing each other, in fact, I had this one gay couple I was working with over the last few months, and the level of tension was getting so high, and I told them not to have verbal discussions for about a week and only email each other.
Hmm.
And all of a sudden they started hearing each other in ways they hadn't before.
Right, because they could see it, absorb it, and,
mm-hmm.
and really listen, because again, we put our own filters on every conversation that we have.
Exactly.
And when money's involved and somebody's own pocketbook's at stake, they hear it the way they want to hear it.
Right. Well, when money's involved also, you're bringing all of the messages and belief systems about money that you were raised on, and you know, it's like all the scarcity thoughts and fear of loss and not trusting people and everything else. It's not just the reality of what's going on in dynamic. The important thing is psychologically sometimes that people are filtering even that interaction based on subconscious belief systems about money, for example.
That's exactly right. That's exactly what my experience has been as well.
And my guess is, and I know some attorneys who will say this, and I don't know if you'll agree, that very often the attorney ends up becoming a therapist if they're really going to try and work through this.
Absolutely. And a good attorney is a therapist in a way, because you talk about the holistic approach on your radio show and in your practice, and in my practice it's a holistic approach as well. If somebody walks into my office and they say, I want to file a lawsuit, I need to talk through with them what is the financial impact, what is the time impact, what's the impact on their business, and what's the impact on them personally and emotionally. Because it might be a good thing for me if they filed a lawsuit, but that's not the issue. My issue is I've got a fiduciary duty to that client. That lawsuit needs to be the best thing for that client in all ways.
Okay.
And I've learned...
Marie, we need to take a short break here, and we're going to come back. I want to talk about that level of integrity that you are talking about, that you approach things with, and the importance of that in intervening with clients. So we're going to take a short break here. This is Stuart Altshuler and Tell the Truth Faster. We'll be right back on KXAN. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler, and tonight we're talking about legal suits, suing, and all that stuff. And my guest tonight is an attorney in Phoenix, Maria Speth, with Jay Berg and Wilk. And Marie, we were talking about the impact of media and the seeds that sometimes it seems like it's planting about legal issues and lawsuits and everything else. What's your take on all this in terms of how that is hurting or helping?
I think the entertainment world and media is giving people an unrealistic and inaccurate perception of what the justice system is all about. For one thing, I think that, you know, anytime there's something in a lawsuit that makes lawyers look bad and makes the justice system look bad, the media will pick that up, pull it out, and make it look like it's the norm. You know, you'll get a frivolous lawsuit that'll be out there, and the media will pick that up and make sure everybody hears about it, and then people will get the perception that attorneys file frivolous lawsuits all the time. And of course, that's not accurate.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't do us any good to file a frivolous lawsuit. We want what's best for our clients. You know, many times an attorney will take a case on a contingency basis and certainly wouldn't do that if they're not, you know, they don't have a good chance of winning, because if they don't win, they don't get paid.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the media would like people to think that you know, we're all ambulance chasers and we're all, you know, unscrupulous, and I just don't think that's an accurate picture. I think that lawyers, for the most part, we have a very high set of ethics, and we're self-governed. And it's really the exception where you
mm-hmm.
get somebody who's out there, and many of these frivolous suits are filed pro bono.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, pro se, meaning that the person is representing themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so rare that you'll get one that an attorney will file just completely off-the-wall suit.
I think some of the frivolous ones also are being filed by corporations that can well afford to put an attorney on it. And so it's not really hurting them, because these attorneys are on, you know, either retainer or are being paid by the corporation anyway.
That goes on sometimes where the corporation figures that they don't care if they win or lose, the lawsuit itself is causing the harm to the other person.
Right.
And they can afford it and the other person can't. And we do have rules in our court systems that, you know, cases that are filed solely to harass, you can end up with sanctions against you. And you know, and a good, strong judge will issue sanctions in cases like that.
Mm-hmm. Like, there was one that I got off that internet also in 1998. Kellogg Company sued Exxon Corporation, claiming that Exxon's whimsical tiger logo which had been in existence for over 30 years, would confuse consumers who associate the Tiger logo with Kellogg's Frosted Flakes mascot Tony the Tiger. So here, both of these mascots have been around for 30 years. Now all of a sudden Kellogg's, who can afford the attorney and probably, like I said, had them on retainer. I think those are the exceptions when you hear it. I mean, those are the things people will laugh about. And, you know, what's the point? But really what it's doing is even the attitude, even bad publicity is still publicity.
And that could be part of it. You are talking about a trademark, and of course you're talking to a trademark.
I know. That's why I picked that one.
I get real sensitive about this. You know, a company's trademark is their image. It's very, very important to them. And so you think of it as a cartoon figure, but Tony the Tiger is a very, very important trademark for Kellogg's. And so I imagine, and they were up against Exxon, so they weren't just bullying somebody around. I imagine they must have perceived a threat there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm not sure if there were some tactical things that were going on, and I'm sure, you know, there was a whole series of reasons that they filed the suit. But certainly, companies have to take their trademark rights mm-hmm. very seriously.
Right. Well, that was why I picked that one, because I needed to say about it.
Yeah.
Why do people sue?
Well, in reality, sometimes they sue for all the wrong reasons. So if you're asking me why should people sue, I mean, when you've really exhausted all your other remedies, nothing else is working, there's a financial reason to do it, it just makes sense all the way around, then do it. But some people do it for the wrong reason. Some people are in victim mode. You know, they feel that they've been victimized. They feel like they can make it right through a lawsuit. They're crying out for help. They're wanting acknowledgement, and they figure if a jury of their peers says that they were harmed, well then they were really harmed. And some people I've seen go through lawsuits truly don't even care about the money. They need the validation of a court or a jury saying you were right, you were victimized.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the wrong reasons
right.
to file a lawsuit.
Some of the others that I've seen, even in terms of the clients that I've worked with that were in process of litigation and stuff, some of them were honest enough to say, hey, it's a chance I might make a quick buck type of thing. Or they're the type of people that crave attention, that they feel so invisible that it's a way of getting attention or sympathy. But even more so, I've seen it with people who have such a sense of powerlessness about themselves that it's a way to vent their rage and to feel a sense of power over the bad guy that did them wrong.
That's what I see most often.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'll see. I'll see either the victim who wants to continue to be the victim and the lawsuit gives them the ability to do that, or the person who really wants to throw their power and their weight around and wants to use the system to control. Now, you mentioned the quick buck. I haven't run into that too often, and I got to tell you, if somebody goes into a lawsuit thinking it's a quick buck, then their attorney has done them a disservice
mm-hmm.
big time.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is, I don't think, any harder way to make money than to have to go through a long, grueling, emotionally straining litigation.
Right.
But I always tell people that the most unpredictable animal on earth is litigation.
Mm-hmm.
You might think you have a great case, and you might lose. You might think you have a crappy case, and you might win. We don't know how it's going to turn out, but the one thing I can tell you for sure is it's not going to be easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be long, it's going to be hard, it's going to be ugly. So it's certainly not a quick buck.
Right. Well, I just went through this with a very close friend of mine who was one of the individuals that was molested by a priest when he was a kid. And, you know, now he's 40 years old and, you know, has been dealing with AIDS and drug abuse and a real roller coaster type of life type of thing. Now all of these cases are coming to the fore. And for the last 3 years in the diocese back east where he had to file all this, the last 3 years of his life has been dredging up all this stuff again. It's been dealing with the frustration of now because of time limits and stuff. He won't get the multi-millions that some of the more recent ones are getting, and you know they're giving him like a token settlement just to acknowledge what he went through. And you know, in the end, you know, and the attorney gets 40% of whatever it came out. And I'm not begrudging the attorney when I say that, you know, because she certainly put in her time and effort to make sure this got settled and stuff. But the toll it took on him made it so difficult for him to maintain his sobriety, to deal with, you know, emotional balance and stuff. It was just one of the most grueling things I've ever seen anyone go through.
That's right. And people who are plaintiffs in lawsuits, people who bring lawsuits for emotional damages like that, the lawsuit keeps the wound open. It just doesn't allow them to move on and to heal. It, like you said, it dredges everything up. If it was old or if it's fresh, it keeps it fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And so my experience has been that people simply do not move on until the lawsuit is over.
Right.
Now, in his case, there may have been good reasons to do it, and as hard and difficult as it was, we know as a society here, again, that if we don't speak up, if we don't do something about it, then things won't change. So mm-hmm. it's an important role that the justice system plays in that whole mess that's going on.
Right.
So he should be proud of himself that he stepped forward and did deal with it.
Yes, it's forcing, you know, I mean, whether it's the church or other groups or individuals, it's forcing somebody to be accountable for actions that shouldn't have happened.
That's
and it's
true.
Also then empowering people who have been so victimized, who don't want to stay there. And like in his case, you know, it forced him, I mean, he'd been doing therapy on and off his whole life, but it really forced him to go in and start working through in a way that he could never do it before because everything was still on the back burner in his subconscious.
Yeah. And so it brought it all up so he could work it through, but then the longer it goes on, the longer it stays open for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I'm talking with a client about settling a case, one of the factors that we have to factor in, I mean, you just absolutely have to factor it into the equation is if we settle it, it's done. You can move on. There's a lot of value in being able to close the book and move on.
Mm-hmm. It's part of the grieving process,
yes.
Like anything else. There has to be a sense of completion. And for some people, say it's you know, I've had a couple of clients that have had to deal with the fact that what they were suing about actually became something that was life-threatening, and they knew they didn't have much time left, so to speak. And for them, the completion was the fact that, number one, somebody had to take responsibility because there was some legitimacy to that, and it would allow them to leave some kind of legacy to their children.
Right.
And that was an important aspect of it, a sense of their children got to see that they fought the good fight,
mm-hmm.
and it gave them some sense of pride, but it also knew that they were going to be able to leave some cash settlement for the kids, too.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I'm not asking you to get too specific because I know you're guided by the same laws of confidentiality or the ethics of it that therapists are.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say would be the most extreme situation where you've seen somebody actually go through a process like this and it be a real healing for them?
Wow, you know, I think it's always a healing when it's done.
Mm-hmm.
I think any time I can think of three or four cases where emotional distress was a key factor in the case and was a, you know, the underlying event was something that more than causing monetary loss or physical loss caused emotional loss. And in those cases, in every one of those cases, once the case was over, it was a healing. It was, okay, I worked through this, I did something about it, and now I can move on.
It's like doing a firewalk.
Yes, yes. But in the meantime, I also watched that throughout the litigation, they relived it and relived it and relived it, and they didn't move on, they didn't heal, they didn't get better. In fact, in many cases, I saw that they were getting worse, that it was more emotionally disturbing to them as time went on.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I've had that conversation with clients so many times to say, look, the settlement may not be everything that you wanted, and maybe what they're offering you is not everything that you wanted, but let's consider your emotional healing, your ability to put it aside, to say, okay, I've accomplished what I needed to accomplish. They've paid something because the other side has, you know, paid attorney's fees and now they're paying you money. And so you know that you've accomplished to make them accountable for what they did to you. Now move on. You know, now put it aside and move on. And that's always a healing. I can't think of any cases where it wasn't a healing.
Yeah, I can agree with that. There are now two systems. We have criminal courts and we have civil courts. And I mean, the classic example that comes to most people's minds is the O.J. Simpson case, where the criminal court went one way and the civil court went the other way. And it's almost as if the satisfaction wasn't gained in one, and yet that there was a different level that we'll talk about after this break, that allowed people an additional recourse to get to that place of closure. So we're going to take a short break here and come back with Maria Speth. This is Stuart Altshuler on Tell the Truth Faster. Stay tuned on KXAM.
That I heard of once in a life.
Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler, and tonight we're talking about lawsuits and the impact it has not just on society but on the lives of the individuals involved in them. And my guest tonight is Maria Speth, who is an attorney in Phoenix with J. Berg & Wilk. And Maria, before the break, I started talking about the difference in the levels of results and satisfactions and the emotional impact of criminal court versus civil court, and using the O.J. Simpson case where the criminal court went in one direction and yet the parents went to civil court and actually got a judgment.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the difference, and how? Why is, if he can be found not guilty, if someone can be found not guilty in one, they're still found responsible in another? How's that work?
Well, because in criminal court, the burden of proof is clear and convincing evidence. I'm sorry, is beyond all reasonable doubt.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to find somebody guilty, you have to find them guilty beyond reasonable doubt. In the civil case, to find somebody responsible, it's a preponderance of the evidence. So if you imagine in your mind a scale, all the jury has to do is say, does the scale tip one way or the other? And if the scale tips in the favor of, well, it looks like he may have done it, and I lean towards that, then you find him responsible, and that's fine. But in criminal court, you've got to have that scale way tilted one way.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a different burden of proof for obvious reasons. I mean, to take somebody's money is one thing, and to throw somebody in jail for life or even execute them is a whole other standard.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I definitely agree with you on that, and yet a lot of people, I think, got confused and found some inconsistencies when you see, you know, like I said, the criminal court go one way and the civil court go another way. But your explanation, I think, is an important one.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously civil court allows for recourse for a lot of the purposes we talked about that individuals go for suit in terms of reaching closure with something or, a sense of empowerment and, dealing with responsibility. So civil court actually is the place where most of this takes place.
Exactly. In the criminal court, you don't have any control over that. If you're a defendant, if you're being accused of a crime, you don't have any say on whether you're going to go forward. And the state makes all those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So when I talk about these issues, I'm certainly talking about civil cases where you have individuals who have disputes with one another or companies that have disputes with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, in the O.J. case, with the parents, didn't find any satisfaction or justice in the criminal system. And so then they said, well, let's take it into the civil court because there we can say we're victims and we want to be compensated for what happened.
Mm-hmm. Good. So now we live in economic times that are so difficult for so many people. I mean, there's more credit card debt out there than I think ever before in history, and of course our government has a higher level of debting than we've had since the Reagan years, I think. And bankruptcy filings, in fact, off that same website I quoted before, said in federal courts, bankruptcy filings increased 14% in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with the economy the way it is, my guess is it's continued to go up, but I don't have those stats in front of me. There's so much involved, as we said earlier, with issues around money for people, but the emotional impact of finally getting to the point of filing bankruptcy, and I know there are plenty of people that file bankruptcy thinking, oh, you know, I can run up all the debt I want to file bankruptcy, and they laugh their way through it. But for most people, it's a very traumatic and emotional and humiliating experience to do something like that. What is you know, your take on the issue of the impact of bankruptcy and, you know, the human toll.
I think you're absolutely right. My firm has a department that does bankruptcy work, and I'm not in that department, but I see a little bit of what goes on. And I think you're right. I think that from the individual's perspective, most people, it's a pride thing. It's I failed. You know, it's very, very difficult for somebody to say, you know, I need to start over because I can't handle all the debt and I can't handle what I've gotten myself into. But to have to file bankruptcy, it's, you know, nobody really wants to do it. I mean, I shouldn't say nobody. You're right. There's that sprinkled in people who take advantage of the system, but for the most part, people don't want to do it. And even when they do it, they resist putting down some people that they owe debt to. You know, you don't have to list everybody. And some people say, well, I don't want to list that person. I don't want to discharge that debt. I feel bad about that. I feel terrible about that. And so, yeah, people bring in to that whole litigation process, the bankruptcy litigation process, all that baggage we carry about money and financial issues. And, you know, and it is. It's a very difficult process as well.
Mm-hmm. Again, moving into other areas, and I know that, you know, bankruptcy and money is certainly a major thing. How do you see these cases, whether it has to do with finances and bankruptcy, whether it has to do with, you know, product issues, whether it has to do with the malpractice issues and stuff, how do you see in your office the impact this has on relationships when couples and families come in who are dealing with stuff like this? What's your observations as an attorney from outside the impact this has on relationships and family?
It can be devastating. I had a case 2 years ago that the couple ended up being plaintiffs in a lawsuit because of a business deal that went terribly wrong, and they were taken advantage of by a very shady business person. They went through a whole process in the relationship between them of whose fault it was, how could things have been different, you shouldn't have trusted him, you shouldn't have done this, you shouldn't have done that. And they lost their business, and ultimately their marriage split up, and they never did get back together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you hear attorneys say, oh, loss of consortium, you know, the marriage split up because of this happening. Well, it's real sometimes. It really does happen, and I would say not only the underlying dispute, but even the litigation itself helped to split up that marriage.
How so? The litigation itself?
Because through that litigation process, they both had different points of view on what to do. One of them wanted to settle and get out and move on, and one of them wanted to fight and regain, you know, his dignity and his honor, and he had been wronged, and he wanted to, he wanted to really press that issue. And that's not the way the wife saw it. So the litigation process itself, first of all, it was financially burdensome for them, and then there was all these decisions to make and all of the, you know, again, dredging up everything that had occurred, and they had lost their business as a result of this particular business dealing, and now they were just reliving all that.
So the bottom line issue with this, as well as anything else practically, has to do with what we talked about earlier about communication skills and techniques and how to negotiate, how to mediate through some of this, whether it's about the legal issues themselves or about the conflict that's going on in the context of the relationship, you know, whether it's a spouse, partner, husband, wife, significant other, whatever you want to call, that it gets right back down to communication issues and how are they really hearing each other.
Right. It's always about communication.
Yeah.
I mean, you feel it, and I, like I said, almost every lawsuit that I've ever been involved in, even the ones that on their face don't appear to be about communication, if you really look at them, you realize that things could have been different if people had communicated differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember a medical malpractice case years ago that I represented the plaintiff, and we went through the whole litigation. And what I remember the plaintiff saying to me over and over again was that when his dad died, the doctors never even talked to him. The doctors tried to cover up what was happening. The doctors never came clean, basically, was his perception. Went through the litigation, listened to the doctor's side of the story at trial in front of a jury, in front of a whole courtroom full of people, and at the end, we actually lost. And at the end, my client said, you know, if the doctors had said to me in the hospital what they said in the courtroom to the jury, I never would have filed this lawsuit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because the doctors had never communicated what they did and why they did it. And so it left the impression, from my point of view, from the expert witness doctor's point of view, and from my client's point of view, that they had not done what they were supposed to do.
Which speaks to the whole issue of a partnership when it comes to health issues.
Mm-hmm.
That it's so important. I mean, again, you know, my history with dealing with friends who have AIDS and everything else, the ones that do better and the support system, I've been durable power of attorney for so many friends, going through this, is the ones that have done better and the situations that have gone better, even if the friend has passed away, were the ones where there was a real partnership with the medical professionals and the patient and, you know, the significant, like, durable power of attorney or spouses or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
When there is a real partnership, when the doctors are not walking on eggshells worrying about everything they're doing being questioned, and they're not in a defensive mode, and they're really showing up with their hearts open and a level of integrity that you were talking about earlier when you deal with your clients.
That's right. It's a partnership between me and my clients. Mm-hmm. I know the law, they know their situation, and together we can, you know, make it happen. Same thing with a doctor. You know your own body, and the doctor knows the medicine. Put the two together. Be a partner. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. The which gets me actually to the next level. When you're dealing with this kind of situation with one of your clients, you know, obviously I'm a therapist, I have a certain bias and I have a certain attitude about the benefits of bringing another partner into the process, which would be a counselor or a psychotherapist or a couples counselor or somebody that is working with them. And I've had a number of attorneys that would refer clients to me because the case went easier when the client was doing something else to keep themselves balanced in
right.
some way. How often does that come into play for you, and what can you say about, from an attorney's viewpoint, the importance of the clients dealing with a psychotherapist and dealing with these things openly psychologically?
I think it depends on the type of case. With the cases that have less of an emotional aspect to them, like the business cases and the trademark cases, which I tend to do most of my practice in, that might not be as necessary, although even those can be stressful and emotional. But certainly when I have in the past dealt with more personal injury cases and cases where there are emotional damages, absolutely. I've encouraged the client, and I have met with the counselor, with the client, to say, look, maybe the three of us should meet. Because I had a situation fairly recently where the client couldn't get past certain emotional issues that were really holding him up in the case and not making it possible for us to settle and close the case. Well, I got his therapist involved, and the three of us met together. And that really helped to say, okay, where are we at? What are your goals? What is it you're trying to accomplish here, and how can we accomplish them?
Oh, that's excellent. I'm so glad to hear you say that. And for the therapist to be willing to see that they're a part of this process and in partnership with the attorney in working with the client.
Right.
You know, to me that's important too. Which gets me now to actually one of my own pet peeves about dealing with the legal system and people in therapy. And now we're going to have to wait in suspense as to what that is, because we have to take a final break here. This is Stuart Altshuler and Tell the Truth Faster with my guest Maria Speth. We'll be back after this final break for this last piece of suspense. Stay tuned.
That I heard of once in a lifetime.
Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler, and tonight we've been talking, the title of the show is You Do and I'll Sue. Talking about the impact of lawsuits have not just on our society, but also on the emotional, spiritual, and physical and psychological well-being of humans. And my guest, Maria Speth, is an attorney, and she's been gracious enough to be on the show tonight. And before the break, I was going to talk about my pet peeve as a therapist, and that is clients who come into therapy knowing that they're trying to build a case when they go to court, that they want a letter from me or my testimony, or they want to be able to say, you know, I needed all this therapy and this is what all this caused my pain and suffering, that it sent me into years of therapy, or the attorney themselves are saying to them, it would do real good and it would look real good in the court if you were seeing a therapist in the meantime and doing that. What are your thoughts on that, Maria?
I would say that's my pet peeve as well. An attorney is not doing a service to anybody by sending somebody to therapy just for that reason, just to pump up a case.
Mm-hmm.
If the emotional distress damages are not severe enough to require therapy, then they aren't. And if they are, then, you know, perhaps the attorney might say, and I've done this, I did this once or twice with clients who I thought they truly needed therapy, and I said, it'll be good for the case. But that was really my excuse to get them in there to talk to somebody. But, I mean, it's not going to do them any good if they're only there to pump up their case. They have to go to therapy because they think it's going to help them.
And I've had people show up with what you say. My attorney said I should be here, and I could tell that the attorney knew that was the only way they could get them there,
right,
and they really needed to be there.
Right.
And sometimes it was the client's idea, and they ended up tricking themselves because they actually started doing some very good work.
Right, but they have to be committed to the process, not just there to show up and get a record.
But they didn't know that they'd get committed to the process before they showed up.
Right.
In their mind, it was their rationale for just showing up.
Right.
But there are some people that I know as soon as they get there, that I know I'll be seeing them for however long, and as soon as the case is settled, I won't be seeing them again.
Right, and it must be very difficult for you to do your part of the job, which is to take a realistic diagnosis of what they're telling you. I mean, because you rely so heavily on what the patient tells you,
mm-hmm,
that it must be difficult if you're not sure if the patient's being straight with you.
Well, intuitively, I think after 30 years, I can kind of tell that, and I'm one to be direct and confront them, and I'll,
mm-hmm,
say, why are you really here?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, and usually how I'll hook them is, you know, as long as you're here anyway, you want to at least maybe do some healing work and maybe release some of this stuff. And when they think about it, very often they end up saying, yeah, you know, it's been a long time in there, even before this legal thing. And it's a good way to kind of approach it.
Right.
Maria, I know we need to end here soon. I really, really want to thank you. I know it's been since last February that I've been trying to get you on the show. And I'm so grateful that you finally made the time to do this. I think the topic's been very important, and your contribution to the topic has been very effective and very important.
Well, thank you. It's been fun.
And how can people reach you if they have questions or have some issues, whether it has to do with intellectual property or anything else that we talked about tonight?
There's my firm's website. It's www.jaburgwilk.com. It's spelled JaburgWilk.com. Or they can just call me at 602-248-1089.
And as I tell people every week, if you didn't get a chance to write all that down and you won't remember it, just remember the name of the show, Tell the Truth Faster, and you can go to tellthetruthfaster.com, and you could get that same information off the website, hopefully within the next 2 days if it's not already up there, with a little bio on Maria and a hyperlink to her law firm's site. And I actually have some friends working on the archived aspect of this show, which means hopefully within the next few weeks, this show and the last few months that are not up there will all be up there, and people, if they want to listen to it, or Maria, if you want to send people to the site to get information about this, you can send them, they can listen to the whole show again.
Great.
So anything else? Last closing thought? Last opportunity?
Just I always tell people in litigation, do things exactly the way you would if you weren't in litigation. Don't go to therapy just because of the litigation. Don't close a business or anything that they might think. People say, well, should I do that? Would it be better for the lawsuit? I always tell people, do what's best for you in your life, not what's good for a lawsuit.
Mm-hmm. And I want to close, in addition to thanking you again, Maria, with the thought that it's really important to tell the truth faster about your motives for doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're deciding that you're at the point where a lawsuit is appropriate, it really is important that you've checked out whether you've done the communication, tried to negotiate, tried to mediate, and that this is a last resort, and that your motivations are clear and have integrity and are grounded in a sense of purpose that will be helpful and not just raking yourself through the coals. So with that thought, I want to thank Maria again, and I want to thank all of you who have been listening to the show. We'll be back next Tuesday night. This is Stuart Altshuler and Tell the Truth Faster on KXAM in Phoenix. Thanks for listening.
Stuart.